listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on...
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you'd like to join me today, and I do have a guest who I'm going to tell you about in a moment, the call-in number is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. I'd love to hear what's on your mind and what is eating at you, because when it comes to binge eating or any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not what you're eating, it's why. So I am sure that you have heard the term intuitive eating a lot. And if you have questions about intuitive eating, then I have a guest with answers. Let me introduce you to Alana Vandersloot. Alana, I knew that was going
to
happen.
It happens.
Alana Vandersloot. I get it right? Oh my gosh. How embarrassing. I can't believe I did that. Alana is a certified intuitive eating counselor, a health at every size advocate, an author, speaker, and eating disorder survivor. She is the founder of Freedom with Food and Fitness, where she offers virtual coaching for women who want to heal their relationship with food, weight, and their bodies for good. And yes, folks, it's possible through intuitive eating and fitness. She believes you don't need to be on a diet to be your healthiest, most confident self, and that living your best life is something that starts in the mind. So yes, absolutely. We are totally like-minded. So as a result, Alana creates a unique blend of coaching for her clients that includes not only the intuitive eating principles, but also inquiry-based mindset work that can be applied to all areas of life. Her book, Freedom with Food and Fitness, A Guide to Quitting Diets, Enjoying Exercise, and Becoming Your Healthiest, Most Confident Self as an Intuitive Eater, will be published next year by Urano Publishing. So welcome, Alana. I'm so glad to have you.
I'm so glad to be here. Because I had you on my show. The episode hasn't aired yet, but, you know, we said that I would come on your show, and I'm just so happy to finally be here. We planned this months in advance.
Yes, yes. Well, it's just so wonderful to have someone on with such a like-minded sensibility. So let's just dive right in. Let us know how you came to do this work. What is your own personal history?
It's a good question. And I'm sure a lot of people in this space, a lot of intuitive eating counselors, dietitians, have made, as I call it, a message out of their mess. When I was in my 20s, I was in a position where I didn't know what my next step was, you know, because throughout school, it was always, you know, I got good grades, I got the gold star, I excelled at a lot of things, and I could check off the boxes, and it was easy to see how I was doing in the game of life. And at the end of grad school, I really didn't know what my next step was. I didn't know where I was going to get a job, if I was going to get a job, and I was being thrust into the real world where there is no A, there's no real gold star. And I felt very lost, and I felt very out of control of what was happening in my life. So I took control, quote unquote, over the thing that I thought I could have control over, which was food and weight. And it manifested and went down this rabbit hole of orthorexia, where it was a hyper focus and obsession with clean eating. There was binge eating disorder, which I know you specialize in, where I was going through periods of restricting, and then binging. And I had body dysmorphic disorder, where what I saw in the mirror, the flaws I saw in the mirror, were either very minor or weren't even there, but I perceived them to be there and I obsessed with them. And this went on for about 7 years. And after I recovered, you know, I've been a high school teacher for 10 years now. And I thought, well, I have such a passion for intuitive eating, which I think saved my life, and teaching. And I said, well, why don't I create a business all my own where I can marry those two things together and I can coach other women to be in a position that I used to be in and help them get out of it so that they don't have to spend another day the way that I was.
And what's wonderful about what you do is that you have the compassion and the empathy from having had that experience yourself. Mm-hmm. So that is wonderful. Okay. So you've said that no one thought you had a problem, you know, and people say that a lot. Oh, you don't have a problem. Either they say, oh, you have a problem. What's wrong with you? Or they're like, no, you don't have a problem. So what was your experience with that? Why people just didn't realize or recognize, especially with orthorexia, I'm sure they didn't recognize that this was actually not okay, and it was actually a dangerous type of eating.
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think there's a definite difference between what is normal and what is common. Dieting, a lot of diet rules are super common to, you know, monitor your carb intake, to not have carbs at every meal. That's a very common rule that we hear and that a lot of us participate in, but that is simply diet culture, right? Not eating after 7 p.m., avoiding processed foods. There's a lot of fear mongering around processed foods. So when you're somebody who's orthorexic and you're eating, you know, quote unquote clean, everybody looks up to that. Everybody thinks that you are the pinnacle of health and wellness. Meanwhile, your mental health is deteriorating. You are constantly thinking about food or are fearful of food. And quite frankly, it's not the pinnacle of physical health either, because one example is I wasn't able to digest a lot of foods after a while because I had limited myself to maybe like half a dozen safe foods that I considered safe to eat. And then when I tried to eat anything outside of those foods, my gut bacteria wasn't varied enough to even handle those foods. I was getting IBS symptoms, lots of bloating, lots of stomach aches. And I just found that to be confirmation that, ooh, those foods must be bad. But in reality, it was my restriction that was causing those symptoms. And in terms of the size and shape of my body, I'm in a straight size body. BMI is not a great indicator of health, but we use it a lot. But according to BMI, I was quote unquote a normal weight. And everybody would look at me and say, you know, you look really good. Like, you know, you're thin and you're fit. And I said, thank you out loud. But what I really wanted to say is, well, I have an eating disorder. Do you want that too? You know, they didn't, and nobody thinks that you should be getting help because you look normal and your behaviors appear normal in a diet obsessed society.
You know, you bring up a good point, which is that you cannot tell whether someone has an eating disorder or disordered eating by looking at them. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions, isn't it, with binge eating, because people who struggle with binge eating can be any size. They can be overweight. They could be normal weight. They could be underweight. You can't tell what someone is going through by looking at them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you've also talked about coaching and the importance of coaching. And tell us a little bit about your journey where you thought that you didn't need help, or, you know, I don't need help. I can do it myself. But because I hear that a lot, like, oh, it's shameful to need help.
Right. So I'm an only child, so I have a very independent spirit. I feel like I can do it all on my own and I don't need anybody else's help. I was always the person in school that didn't like group work because I would always have to do it all anyway. And I felt like I could do this on my own. I could tackle it on my own. I didn't need therapy. I didn't have time for therapy. I told myself, you know, I'm in school. I have to do my schoolwork. Then I have to have free time for friends. And I just don't have time for therapy. And I don't have the money for therapy, I would tell myself, right? That's expensive. Like, I don't, you know, that's a luxury. I can't do that. And I don't regret my eating disorder at all, because I think I've learned a lot of life lessons through that eating disorder, and it brought me to my business and to making a difference in the world the way that I hopefully am. But I do regret not seeking help that I did desperately need, because it took me 7 years to recover. It probably didn't have to take that long. If I had an expert who was there to hold me accountable, and, you know, this journey is rough. Like, when you're healing your relationship with food and your body, it's rough. You fall down on your face a lot. You fail a lot. You have those moments where you're really scared about what's going to happen in recovery, because you know what happens with dieting. You know that devil. That's the devil you know, but you don't know what's going to happen to you on this journey of recovery. You need somebody who's going to be there to say, hey, it's okay. I've been here too. This is normal. You're going to be okay. And have the expertise to show you why you're going to be okay and give you the, you know, show you your blind spots on the journey that you maybe don't see. Like, every coach needs a coach. You know what I'm saying? Everybody needs a coach.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because we cannot have an objective view of our subjective experiences. And whenever someone feels shame about if I help them see something that they didn't see themselves, I tell them, like, to become a psychoanalyst, you've got to be in, first of all, you have to be a licensed mental health professional, either a doctor, a psychologist, a therapist, or a psychiatric nurse already before you do your training. You already have to be a licensed mental health professional. And then you have to go for psychoanalysis for a minimum of 4 years, 4 times a week. So even people who are licensed mental health professionals don't have the wherewithal to have a knowledge of themselves. So we can only know what we know. And it's a good thing that you were able to see that. And now that you are that person for other people. Yeah. Okay. So this is something we all know intellectually. Losing weight is not the key to happiness. I think most of us know that intellectually, and yet the diet culture has centered on that message as, if you lose weight, you will have the life that you want to have. You will be a different person. All of that. What do you, as an intuitive eating counselor and a health at every size advocate, say to that notion, that diet culture notion, that change your body, change your life?
It's a great marketing ploy, and it's made them hundreds of billions of dollars every year because it's not sustainable. And it can fail you as many times as it will, because you'll keep going back to it and spend money on it. And it's a great profiting machine for them. I say that you have been told these messages your whole life. And any message that you're told repeatedly will form a neural pathway in your mind, and eventually you will indoctrinate that thought as fact, which is why I've decided to incorporate inquiry-based mindset work into my practice, because, you know, I have my clients journal, and they'll journal down their thoughts, and they are convinced that their thoughts are facts, that those are, like, real things. And I have to tell them, like, is that a fact? And they stop and they're like, what do you mean? Of course it's fine. No, is it really true that your body is disgusting? Is that a fact that would hold up in court? And they're like, well, no. And, you know, I ask them, like, how do you feel when you think that? And who would you be without that thought? If the thought isn't a fact, it's an opinion, it's a choice to believe. What would happen if you let that thought go? So it's all about mindset work. And that's another reason why we need a coach, is to create a new neural pathway takes a whole lot of repetition. So you need to be hammering yourself with these new thoughts to replace the old thoughts.
Yeah, I look at it as you have a ski path. The original neural pathway is like a ski path, and it doesn't take much to just go down that ski path. Yeah. But you have to create a new ski path. And that means clearing it out, clearing out the snow and the trees and the roots. But as you do that, it's hard, it's tough, it's difficult work to create something new. But as you do that, the other ski path fills in with snow. So it gets harder to go down. And the new one eventually becomes the easy way that you think. Mm-hmm. So I have a question here from Kylene. She says, I'm curious on tools, books, and suggestions on how to keep a positive mindset while practicing intuitive eating.
Fantastic. So podcasts were the thing that actually helped me recover, because I would listen to them constantly, and that's how I created some of my new neural pathways. Again, took longer than it should have, but it did happen. Recommended reading, I would 100% say go to the founders, go to Evelyn Triboli and Elise Resch, the Intuitive Eating book. It's in its fourth edition now. They also have a workbook, which is phenomenal. In terms of podcasts, I would say the Dear Body podcast by Jesse Jean, Mary's Cup of Tea by Mary Jelkovsky, my podcast, the Finally Free podcast, How to Love Your Body by the Body Love Society is another great one. The Body Is Not an Apology is a great book. There's so many books. And you know what? I Christy Harrison's book, Anti-Diet, her podcast, Food Psych. There are so many things out there. And curate your feed on Instagram or whatever social media you choose for words like intuitive eating, health at every size, weight neutrality, body positivity. Those are the words you're going to want to maybe look at the hashtags for and find people that aren't talking about weight numbers, calorie numbers, low carb, low fat. Get rid of all that. The more you get rid of that messaging, the easier it is to stay on the intuitive eating journey.
I'm just thinking about my 14-year-old daughter who last year decided that she was not going to follow any more fitness, Fitspo, all of those. She said, she's like, Mom, I realize like I go on and I look at those and I just feel bad. So she only is on Instagram for her friends and like cute puppies. That's it.
There you go.
Yes, because what we see affects what we think and feel, and curating that for our own health is so important. So
I think that's really smart of your daughter too, the gut check, right? If you're looking through somebody's posts and you're feeling bad about yourself and you are doing, you know, compare and despair, if you overall don't feel good when you're looking at somebody's account, and that's the thing as a family. I've had to unfollow some of my best friends back in the day because it was very triggering for me.
Okay. Something else that a lot of people have said is, what do you do when you've become mindful, you want to eat healthy, but you don't want to talk about it? You don't want to go to lunch and talk about what you're eating. You don't want to go to lunch and justify what you ordered by saying how much you've worked out. You don't want to apologize for what you're eating. You actually want to be a healthy, intuitive eater. And not have it be the basis of conversation. But your friends are not on board with that. So you are like, okay, I'm going to listen to my body and I'm going to order a sandwich today because that's what I want. And your friend's like, oh, I'm ordering a salad because, oh my God, I ate so much. I can't believe it. And I've had this many carbs. And what are your suggestions for that scenario? That fun scenario.
Yeah, because we've all been there, right? It's the reality of it. You know, there are a lot of ways to set boundaries depending on your comfort level when it comes to, I guess, confrontation. It doesn't have to be that confrontational. You could say something as simple as, you know, listen, I'd really, you know, since we don't ever see each other all that often, I would rather focus our conversation on, you know, things that really mean something to us. And then, you know, switch the conversation, like how is, you know, your partner or how's work going? Just kind of redirect the conversation quickly if that's something that you want to do. Someone says something like, oh, like you lost weight. Be like, yeah, the weight of other people's opinions about my weight. Like you could do something
that's a good right? one.
I always recommend that whatever you do, you know, maybe sit down with a journal and come up with a couple of things that you normally hear people say, either to you or about themselves, some of the more common phrases or sentences or whatever, and write down what you would want your ideal response of those things to be. If you write them down and maybe you get a little bit familiar with what those responses would be, you'll feel more confident in the moment when it actually does happen to say something. You won't be like, oh, I don't know what to say, or you won't be like stumbling over your words. You'll have something in your back pocket to say back to them. And it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't want to start yelling or saying, you know, I don't want to see you anymore. You don't have to, you know, it could be funny. It could be just very genuine. Be honest about your journey. I think that's something that was very honestly freeing for me to actually tell literally the world that I had an eating disorder. It it normalized it for me. I think it gave space for other people to speak up. And some of my friends and, you know, family members, like when I would tell them my story or tell them that I wasn't focusing on those things anymore, they opened up about it as well, about their struggles. It's like once people feel comfortable to talk about it, they start talking about it, because a lot of us are struggling whether other people know it or not.
Yeah. And if the other thing you can do is just deflect, like have something you want to talk about. They say, oh, I've been so bad. And you say, as you said, like, so how are your kids, or how's your partner? They say, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're eating that. You say, can you believe what's going on in our world right now? That, like, you don't even answer it. And after a while, they just get the hint, because after all, like, we have a societal problem, which is that we are talking about our bodies and what we're eating instead of talking about other more meaningful things. It's also a way of keeping us small-minded, you know?
Yeah. And there's a lot of, I'm sure you know, there's some theories out there that diet culture is part of the patriarchy machine, where it's a way to keep women small, literally and figuratively, and down and worried about things like our body instead of taking over the world the way that we should be. And, you know, whether you buy into it or not is a different story. I mean, it's interesting. It's very interesting.
Yeah, we don't want to shrink our minds by focusing on shrinking our bodies.
Right. We'd be doing so much more.
Exactly. Amen, sister. Yes. Okay. So, which leads me to someone else's question. Okay. If you let go of restriction and food rules, how do you deal with weight gain and body image issues after you do that?
Okay. So with intuitive eating, the whole point of it is, one, to feel good in your body, mind, body, spirit, right? And two is to not worry about your weight and to get back to what we call your weight set range. So people like to come to me and say, okay, but am I going to lose weight on this? And I say, well, I don't really know, right? You could gain weight, you could lose weight, or you can maintain your weight. And it really depends on what your current weight is, whether it's above or below your weight set range, and what your current behaviors are. So for example, before I became sick, I was at my weight set range, as most intuitive eaters are, and then I was severely restricting, so I lost weight. So when I became an intuitive eater again, I regained that weight and got back to my weight set range. For somebody who is emotionally overeating, binge eating, they might be above their weight set range. So when you heal that binging and heal that restriction, you might come down. And so there are really no guarantees in intuitive eating other than you will feel better in your body and you will get back to your weight set range. And in terms of body image, being thin and having good body image are not the same thing. At my lowest weight, I was my most miserable. I was my most unhealthy physically and mentally. And I didn't think I looked good at all. Like, I still thought there was more work that needed to be done, apparently. And now I'm at a higher weight than I was then. I won't give numbers, but, you know, I feel better in my body now than I ever did when it was smaller. And that's a lot of mindset work. It has nothing to do with the actual size and shape of your body. It's all in your mind.
And so often when we are trying to lose weight, or we have binge eating disorder, or we have some kind of eating disorder, we are so separated from our bodies. It's as if there's our bodies versus ourselves, or we are fighting our bodies as if it is a separate entity, rather than seeing our bodies as a part of us and a part of our experience. We really have to regain that idea, right? That's what you're talking about, of that, you know, your body is where you live. So might as well make it a good place to live.
Yeah. It allows us to do literally everything that we want to do in our lives, from sitting up in the morning when we wake up to, you know, walking, if you can't, right. And there's also like able body, right. We have to be mindful of that, but our bodies allow us to do everything. So we should be treating them with respect. And, you know, I like to say, people like to see hunger as sabotaging their body goals. But in reality, hunger is a biological cue that your body needs energy. It's not working against you. It's working for you.
Yeah. Okay, I just have to share this because it came into my mind because it's so appropriate. I once dated, well before I met my husband, I dated this guy. When I say dated, I went on 2 dates with him. And on our second date, which was our last date for reasons that will shortly become obvious, he told me that he feels so good about his willpower and himself that when he needed to go to the bathroom, he would wait and he would wait and he would wait and he would not. Exactly. That was my face, I'm sure, at dinner. Like, what the? Mm? He would wait and wait and wait and wait until the very last minute because he was not going to give in to his body and go to the bathroom until he absolutely needed to. And sure, right? It's. I mean, people hear that and they're just like, "What?" But that's an eating disorder too. It's just not about going to the bathroom. It's about eating. It's about taking care of ourselves. So if we can look at it as equally as ludicrous to be against our bodies, and, yeah, you know, to not want to eat as to not want to go to the bathroom. There you have it.
Well, and that's the part of the work too, is building up what we call interoceptive awareness, like being able to listen to our body's cues, right? Because if we are dieting for so long, sometimes we lose the ability to even figure out if we are hungry or full, and we miss those cues. I have a lot of clients who tell me that they all of a sudden they're super, super hungry and then they binge eat. And I'm like, what would it feel in your body when you feel hungry and you're like a growling stomach? And I'm like, well, before that, do you feel irritable or do you start thinking about food a lot or do you feel lightheaded? They're like, yeah, I do. I'm like, okay. So you're missing those initial cues that your body's trying to tell you, hey, it's time to eat, and you're ignoring it. And then that's what's leading to the binging.
So what do you say to someone who says, okay, I know that when I'm hungry, I need to eat, but I also know I might gain weight and get to that set point or that set range. And I just, I'm terrified of that. I'm just too scared. It's just too scary. It's too scary to think about gaining weight. Or,
right. Why? I love playing the why game because it peels back the layers of your reasoning and your thinking. So it's like, you know, I'm afraid to gain weight. Well, why? Well, then I'll be in a larger body. Well, what's so wrong with that? Well, because people will find me attractive. Well, why are you putting your weight on your body? You know, why are you putting your worthiness on your body? Like, why is your weight your worth? And then we start really kind of digging into why you believe the things that you do and starting to challenge those beliefs.
So I invite anyone who's listening, if you want to call in and ask Alana your own question, please feel free. The number is 323-203-0815. And if you are on Instagram and you have a question, feel free to drop it in the comments. We would love to hear from you and answer whatever questions are on your mind. Okay, so that also brings me to your work with health at every size. One of the things that I commonly hear about health at every size is, oh, that's just a way to justify, you know, being heavier, which of course is not true. But what are your responses to those kinds of things? Maybe start by, for those people who don't know what health at every size means, what is it? Because there's a lot of misconception out there.
Sure. What I always took health at every size to mean is that you can engage in healthful behaviors at every size. You can hydrate, you can eat nourishing foods that satisfy you, you can get good sleep, you can meditate, you can have other modes of self-care, you can perform all these things that will bring you authentic body, mind, spirit health at every size. And that's really what it is. But it's also partially dispelling the misconception that thin equals healthy. That is a huge, huge myth. I mean, we look at the BMI scale. In 1998, the threshold for what's considered overweight was lowered arbitrarily. So overnight, tens of thousands of people probably went from being normal weight to overweight just because a committee met and decided to change the number. That doesn't make sense. Also, there are studies that show that people who are overweight, slightly overweight, live longer than people that are in normal bodies. And, you know, that might have something to do with cushion for organs and bones. You know, I'm not as trained as you are, but, you know, from my research and my study, because I'm also a journalist, I read research all the time. Health at every size is dispelling the myth that you can't be healthy if you are not in a quote unquote normal weight range.
It's so interesting. The conspiracy theorist, of which I really am not, in me thinks, I wonder what diet pack led to that arbitrary lowering or, you know, lowering of weight range as normal, because I do know that with cholesterol, when fun fact here, when statins were first invented in the 80s, normal cholesterol, the cutoff was 300. And then the pharmaceutical companies got the government to, there's a whole, you know, political action committee that made, that lobbied for the number to go from 300 to 200. So immediately anyone over 200 would need a statin. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so.
Well, and who do you think profits from that?
Exactly. So it's all the diet industry is really pervasive in areas of that we don't even think of,
right?
In how we think about ourselves,
right? And that's you put a really great point, because a lot of people will just go onto the internet and they don't really know the source of where the information they're reading is coming from, and even if you are, you know, reading scientific studies, digging into who funded those studies can sometimes give you a clear picture of how those results are being, you know, written up and delivered to the public. That's something to always keep in mind. And, you know, what you were just saying about the cholesterol threshold being lowered, I have genetic high cholesterol. There's nothing I can do about it. It's in my family from all directions. And when I would go to my general practitioner, he was like, well, your cholesterol is a little high, so you should, you know, eat healthy and exercise and don't smoke. And I had my eating disorder at the time. So that was so triggering for me. Immediately, I was like, am I not eating healthy enough? Am I not exercising enough? So that can create a really huge problem. But it's the same thing with BMI. When they lowered the threshold, all of a sudden insurance companies could charge higher premiums if you were overweight, the same, and they make money that way, the same way they probably made a ton of money with statins.
Yeah.
I know. So it makes me so angry, which is why I'm doing this work, because I'm so angry.
Yes. I mean, it's, and the more people who's like you, who speak up and who, you know, and me who like, this is the truth. You know, you're being lied to. You're being told something. You think that you're an independent thinker. No, you think those thoughts because you've been conditioned to think those thoughts, which is a really hard pill to swallow for a lot of people. Pardon the expression.
And it's more maddening to me because it's preying on people's innate need to be, I call it SALVE. I use an acronym because I'm an English teacher, so acronyms are my thing. But SALVE, safety, acceptance, love, and validation. That's all we ever want. And we're seeking it through dieting and all these things. So it's really, it's so insidious to see companies prey on the fact that people just want to be loved and accepted.
Something I often ask people is, okay, would you ever say, wow, I really love my friend because she's so thin?
Yeah. And like, of course not, right?
Like, of course, that's ridiculous. Or I liked my friend before, but now she's lost weight. Oh my gosh, I like her even better. Like to recognize how there are these inherent ideas and ideals mm-hmm. that we apply to ourselves, but would never really apply to anybody else.
Right. Exactly. Way, it's like, it's where the exception.
You're changing the world two ways. You are a high school English teacher. So you are changing the world through educating your students and creating a whole generation of people who can think as well as this work. So
trying.
Oh, I probably no trying about it. Doing. Okay, so I have a couple of more questions. Well, I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be. Why? But what if I'm scared to quit dieting? What if I'm too scared to quit dieting and I don't know, really, what this person isn't saying that this, but this is what I hear a lot. And I don't know what to eat or how to eat. How do I learn how to eat when all I've been telling myself is what I shouldn't eat?
Mm-hmm. Maybe start with like looking at a list of foods, like just find a random list and just look at them and say, you know, I like this, I like this, I like this. Go to the grocery store, take a long and leisurely trip and just kind of look at what's available. Look at the things that maybe you wouldn't have looked at before and start choosing foods, not because you should or shouldn't, or because they're good or bad, healthy or unhealthy, but how do you think they're going to make you feel in your body after you've eaten them? Treat it like a science experiment, right? There's nothing that you can really do in terms of trying new foods and seeing how they feel in you that's going to be totally irreversible unless you have like a deathly allergy, right? So just treat it as a science experiment, see what works, see what doesn't. And you're, what was the first one you're afraid to try?
What if I'm too scared to quit dieting? Because I don't know, because I don't know what to eat or how to eat or what do I do next?
I would say, aren't you more scared to not stop dieting? Like, do you want this to be the trajectory of the rest of your life? Because that's how they get you. You're on an unsustainable path. And the only way that you're going to keep the results that you have right now on whatever diet you're on is to keep doing that diet forever. And you really have to ask yourself, is that worth it? And that's something I was just saying to a client this morning, is that you change your body. Like, you can manipulate your body. You could probably get down to your goal weight. You could probably have whatever, you know, abs, whatever. But what are you willing to sacrifice to get that? Because for me, it just wasn't worth it after a while. I realized in order to get the body that I wanted, I would have had to have been at the gym for like 3 hours a day and cutting out all my favorite foods and not going out with my friends and family to dinners or on vacation. I would have to give all this stuff up for this one number on the scale or for the way that my body looked in a reflection. It just didn't seem worth it to me anymore.
And challenging the idea that having the a quote-unquote better body, whatever that means, or your ideal body, changes the way you feel in your life, or changes the way other people respond to you, or changes any aspect of your life other than the size of your jeans.
Right. Well, that's the thing, the spotlight effect, where if you have a mustard stain on your shirt, nobody else might notice it, but you think it's the end all be all. It's all anyone's going to look at. We're so inwardly focused. We think everybody is looking at us, but everybody's worried about themselves. They're not going to be looking at your body and scrutinizing your body the way that you think they will be. And even if they are, that's more of a reflection on their own internal narratives and fat phobia and weight bias. It has nothing to do with you as a person. They're reflecting their own thoughts onto you. And you can't change what other people think of you. You know, no matter what size or shape you are, there will always be somebody who thinks it's too this, too that.
Or not enough, or this, or not enough that, right? And some people go through life attacking themselves. Oh, I'm not good enough. I'm too much. I'm the, they turn against themselves. Other people go through life attacking other people. They'll find something to judge. So if you encounter one of those people, it doesn't matter. It could be your weight. It could be anything about you. They will find something to disparage. I have a whole list of things that people have said to me on social media that's super mean and terrible, because I think it's kind of funny, because people feel the need to just be like, you know, eat a sandwich. That's not the meanest thing people have said, but oh yeah, I have a crazy list, and it's to prove like, hey, haters will be haters no matter what. They'll find something to hate about you, because they have hate within them and they need to discharge it. And if you're in their way, well, they're going to hate something about you. If it's not you, it's someone else. It's not actually about you, to your point.
Right. And the other thing is that, you know, a lot of people come to me and they say, I'll be happy when I just lose X amount of pounds. And I can tell you from personal experience, it won't do it. You know, I had a goal weight in mind. I reached that goal weight. I was happy for about a week and then I wasn't happy again. And it was a very hollow victory. And it was the same with a lot of other things in my life, because I was a very high achiever. I was very perfectionistic. I was like, I'll be happy when I get my bachelor's, when I get my master's, when I get married, right? And it's like, and then you realize none of those things will actually make you happy if you don't already feel happy. And that's an inside job, right? There's nothing on this earth that's going to make you more worthy than you are right now. You just have to realize it and cultivate it.
Perfectly said. Yes. Okay. Another question. How do you handle the I deserve a treat mentality?
The language is something to explore. You deserve a treat anytime that you want it. And that's one of the things about intuitive eating, is one of the principles is we allow all foods. We make peace with food. If we see food as a reward, it's always going to be that kind of forbidden fruit, that thing that we're not allowed to have all the time. And when we see it as that, when we do have the opportunity to get that reward, we overindulge, we stop, you know, honing in on how it's making us feel in our bodies. Like, for example, when I was in my restrict binge cycles, and I'm sure you see this with your clients, every time we had a holiday and there was a dessert table, I would eat one of everything on that table, even if I didn't even like it, even if it was something I knew I didn't even like, I would have it and I would feel overly stuffed, sluggish and bloated and just nauseous, because I'd overstuff myself on things I didn't even like because it was my opportunity to have it. I had been good leading up to that holiday and now I deserve to have everything on that table. So I would overindulge. Now that I can have a cookie literally for breakfast if I want to, when I see a dessert table, I'm very picky with what I want. Like I realize that I actually don't like cookies and cupcakes all that much unless they're really, really great. I'm more of like a ice cream brownie person. So if I see cupcakes on a table and they look kind of meh, I have to eat them saying, well, I deserve it. I could just say, nah, it's not really for me. I can have, you know, I can have that another time if they're really good, and just kind of move on.
Because implicit in this question is, I've been good, so I deserve a treat, right? I've been good by depriving myself, so now I deserve to have the thing that I've been depriving myself of, which is, of course, the restrict binge cycle or the diet binge cycle. You know, in a microcosm, it's you know, deprivation leads to binging or overeating, always.
Yeah, and that's what's so hard to the cycle is. After your binge, your natural diet culture mind inclination is to restrict, to quote unquote make up for the binge. But the only way to get out of the cycle is to just consistently and adequately nourish your body. And the urges to binge will eventually subside.
So what do you tell people who say, I don't know how to listen to my body. My body's going to tell me to eat pizza and ice cream and cupcakes if I try to listen to it. I don't know what that even means. Help.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? That's because you are physically and mentally restricting the foods. Those are the foods that you're going to naturally want to binge on. And at the beginning of an intuitive eating journey, yeah, you probably eat more of those foods that you had been previously restricting. But eventually we get to the point where we reach what we call habituation. If we have a constant exposure stimulus, our reaction to that stimulus becomes less and less. So if you ate the same thing every single day for a month, you would get pretty bored of it, or at least it wouldn't be as exciting as day one. I like to say it's kind of like when your partner says, I love you for the first time. You're like, oh, God, right? It's like the butterflies and you're so excited and it seems so lovely and wonderful. And then 10 years into it, they say, I love you. And it's wonderful to hear, but it doesn't have that same butterflies excitement feeling as it did the first time. So, you know, pick one fear food that you have, one trigger food, and try to incorporate a little bit of it into your everyday routine, and check in with yourself halfway through. How is this making you feel? Because again, the whole point of intuitive eating is feeling good in your body. I want pizza. I know eating half a pie by itself is going to leave me feeling not so great because I've experimented with my food choices and the amounts. But having one or two slices of pizza and some chicken or a salad or something else on the side, grilled veggies or whatever, I know that's going to leave me satisfied because I had the craving of the pizza, but I'm not going to feel sluggish and, you know, like I'm in a food coma afterward.
Just starting to consider actually not just, oh, I'm going to have the thing I can't let myself have normally, and actually considering how it affects us physically is huge, because that's never part of it. It's just, let me have it.
Yeah.
And just starting to think about it.
Yeah. And I mean, think about how you are on vacation. At least this is how I am. First 3 days, I'm like, give me all margaritas and fish tacos and things that, you know, I don't make for myself because I'm too lazy to do it or it's not readily available for me. We do eat a little bit more heavy on vacation, I think, at least I do. And then by day three, I'm like, you know, it really sounds great, like a fresh salad. And it's not coming from afraid I'm going to eat all this weight. It's just like you start craving things nutritionally that your body needs. So if you can start listening in on that, like trust your body to know what it needs when it needs it. And
ask questions. Oh, Carly Gash on Instagram is saying, thank you. So you just helped her. Yeah. Because we tend to, especially if we were say emotionally, neglected, we also learn to neglect ourselves emotionally and physically and never even think about, well, how does that actually affect me? How do I feel physically and emotionally? Mm-hmm. And so that's such an important point. Alana, this has been so, so, so helpful. Is there anything else we haven't covered that you can think of? Oh, Carly Gash is saying you helped me a lot with a flower.
Oh, good. Oh, good, Carly. I'm so glad. Honestly, nothing else. I mean, everybody is very much welcome to DM me at Freedom with Food and Fitness on Instagram. I am starting to get people on the wait list for the fall cohort of my group coaching program called Defy the Diet. It's a 10-week intuitive eating program that blends the inquiry-based mindset work that, again, really, I mean, mindset work has changed my entire life, not just food and body stuff. So anyone who's interested or just has a question or just wants to say hi, come find me on Instagram.
Wonderful. Is that the best place for people to reach you, or website, or anything else you want to out?
The Instagram, find you? The Instagram is definitely the best, at Freedom with Food and Fitness. And the link in my bio has all my free resources, videos, my email list, blog, podcast, that has really everything.
Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for being here today and for really enlightening us about what intuitive eating is and isn't, because there are so many misconceptions, and you just gave such a wealth of tips and information and insight and hope. So thank you so much for being here. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me on the Dr. Nina Show. I am here every Wednesday at 11 on LA Talk Radio. And if you can't listen or watch live, I'm also live streaming on Instagram. You can listen later at Apple Podcasts or anywhere where you get your podcasts. So stay curious, not critical. Listen to your bodies. Be kind to yourself. I'll see you all next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.